This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast recording entitled Security, Privacy, and Compliance Tools in M365. I am your moderator, Mark Manoukian, IT Director of Kegler Brown Hill & Ritter in Columbus, Ohio. I am thrilled to be joined today by our speaker, Paul Edlund, Chief Technologist of the Midwest Region from Microsoft. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, Mark.
Paul, please remind us, what are some of the traditional security, privacy, and compliance tools in M365? And I'm talking about tools that go to performing functions that we in the legal community have been performing for years, according to known strategies and tactics.
Before I go through that, I think it's important for people to understand what our strategy and strength is. I think that the native strength that Microsoft brings, besides being a leader in all the magic quadrants, which is kind of table stakes, is that everything is integrated, right? So the point behind our security strategy is not necessarily the individual widget. It's about the speed with which you can integrate them together. And usually that's a slider or a turn it on, a connect of some sort. It's not a configuration. And what we find is that, you know, that leads to a lot more productivity for our, you know, for our security people. You know, and we always kind of constantly battle the, you know, the brightest, shiniest object in the tool belt. But, you know, the point is that there's a lot to be said for native integration. So coming back to your question, I mean, like some of the things that people think of as, you know, almost like table stakes in modern security are proper device management. And so a capability that we have called Intune.
Right.
And one of the newer, you know, newer thoughts, and I would say, you know, kind of areas where people are maturing up is in a SIM. You know, security event, information event management tool. And, you know, the incumbents in those spaces would be the likes of Proofpoint, QRadar, LogRhythm, ArcSight, Devo, et cetera. Microsoft's is called Sentinel. Then there's a whole bunch of Defender stuff that Microsoft just laid down. We love keeping our customers on our on their toes. So, you know, we have this word called Defender, which used to be called Advanced Threat Protection. By the way, a dirty secret in the background. We had the reason why we rebranded from ATP to Defender was because in the security world, we had this concept of advanced persistent threats, right? So we had a tool called Advanced Threat Protection that looked for advanced persistent threats. In other words, ATP looked for APTs. So it was confusing. And the other thing that we wanted to know, we wanted our customers to know is that whenever you see the word Defender, it just means that all of this is talking to each other. So we have, consequently, we have something called Defender for Office, Defender for, you know, well, Defender for Office 365, Defender for Endpoint, Defender for Identity, Defender for Postgres, Defender for SQL, Defender for Storage, Defender for, you know, and the list goes on and on. But the point that we want, Defender for Cloud, Defender for Cloud Apps. But the point that we want people to understand about those is there is no integration. It's just turn it on and they talk to each other natively. So, you know, that's really, like I said, where our strength kind of resides. And then, you know, the last part of this is really just the data, which is also a part of security. We don't, you know, we don't exclude the data from our security tooling. And so within that world, we have something called Microsoft Information Protection. And within that strategy, that's all things data, compliance, security, privacy, DLP, insider risk, et cetera.
Right. And so you just hit a laundry list of tools within the Microsoft M365 and Azure ecosystem that I at least think of as discrete, separate tools and functions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in the past, we had a third party, you know, MDM solution. We migrated to Intune, and correct me if I'm wrong, Intune is now called Endpoint Manager, although I still see
it labeled Intune. Yeah, we use them interchangeably. Yeah. The Endpoint Manager nomenclature really stems from the fact that Configuration Manager, which was the traditional on-prem management capability, and Intune work with each other to do co-management. So when we say Microsoft Endpoint Manager, we're really referring to the suite of capabilities that include Configuration Manager for your traditional on-prem stuff and Intune, but they're talking to each other and they're integrated. So we have, you know, if you want to do something like co-management, it's there, it's natively integrated once again.
And sure.
The point.
And what I'm really getting out of this is my way of thinking about this is really outdated. I mean, especially when you talk about how they're integrated with each other.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to keep up. We were talking about this before we got on the call, Mark. Sorry to interrupt. It's hard enough for me to keep up with everything that Microsoft is doing in security. So I can imagine what it's like for our customers. I mean, you know, they have to remember what we do and then remember what everybody else is doing too and try and figure out how they fit with each other. And that's hard. It is hard.
It's hard. And, you know, to provide a little context for somebody such as myself, I'm a 70 attorney firm and I'm the epitome of the guy that wears 27 different hats. I would think that, you know, if I'm a 2000 attorney firm and I had the opportunity to specialize just in security, privacy, and or compliance, I could spend a lot more time drilling down and familiarizing myself with these things. So it's really, really hard for somebody such as myself to keep up. So you talked about the integration amongst all of these different tools. And I'm aware that, you know, some of the tools and some of the approaches that are now available in M365 are new to me. And they present new opportunities to do things a little bit differently when it comes to security. So what are some of the newer strategies towards security, privacy, and compliance? And what are the tools and pieces of integration that go to pursuing those strategies? I know that Microsoft itself, for example, is eating its own dog food and implementing some strategies that are certainly new to me. So can you talk about those a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm tempted to come back to something you said or written a few seconds ago, though, Mark, is that, you know, when you say that you're a 70 person shop, that's really the power of the integration, is that you don't have to focus on how to integrate, you know, product A with product B with product C. And that's really your intellectual property, by the way. That's not, you know, that's the hard part. So coming back to your, you know, coming back to the question that you asked, like, what are some of the newer things, newer strategies? Some are, you know, I would say not necessarily new, but, you know, still new for our customers, right, to deploy.
Right, you know, new for me.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, not necessarily always new, but like, I'll give you a few examples. I haven't used my password at Microsoft in the last 18 months. Now, that's not completely true. It's a partial truth. There are a handful. There's one that I can think of solution where I still need my password, and it's for remote desktop. And it's because remote desktop services doesn't have like native FIDO2 Windows Hello for Business kind of MFA support yet. That's coming, right? We're working on it. But the idea is that if it weren't for that, I wouldn't use my password ever. And I don't need to use VDI for my job, right? And nobody at Micro, very rarely do we need it. It's security people occasionally do when you're in production. But like the point being is that that's the only time I ever need my password. Otherwise, I haven't used my password in 18 months, and every single employee without exception, and I'm not making this up, this sounds like a marketing thing, it is not. Every person that you've ever talked to who's moved away from passwords in any company is ecstatic about that. It's because it's painful to manage passwords. You're like, right, I know that I shouldn't do this, but it's too hard to remember all my stuff. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go summer 2022 exclamation point. Then I'm going to go spring 2022 pound sign, right? And those variations of however people iterate through their passwords is what leads to breaches, right? So that's one of the things, is that, you know, being passwordless is so much more fun for me as an end user. And there are some other things, like if you go into Microsoft offices, as an example now, there is no more BACnet in our architecture. In other words, when you get on the wired or the wireless network, you're not on the same network with servers and, you know, storage and, you know, directory servers and things like that. Your default route is out to the internet. So we treat every device in our environment as an untrusted device until proven otherwise. And the reason why we did that is because of ransomware. You know, we're all Azure AD joined machines. So if you look at the properties of my desktop, it says work group, right? So if something breaches my machine, it has nobody else to infect. All the local administrator accounts are randomized using something called LAPS, local administrator password services, which is free, by the way. Sure. And you know, if they can't climb laterally and there's no infrastructure to talk to, largely ransomware would stop on my machine. So, you know, so we don't do BACnet anymore. We instead use something called App Proxy, which is really our means of exposing BACnet servers to the internet, even if they have no clue of things like zero trust and conditional access. Now we can do that in front of them because we put the conditional access zero trust stuff on the proxy server.
Right.
So now, so, you know, those are some other things for me. So we don't use VPN anymore at Microsoft, right? You mentioned our dog food. This is all the dog food things. We don't do VPN anymore. I have a VPN. It can connect for very limited use cases. But once again, I probably use that 2 or 3 times a year. I'm not exaggerating. 2 or 3 times a year, maybe. Yeah,
go ahead. So I want to interrupt for just a second. I mean, it's remarkable that you don't have a VPN in the sense that at least within the ILTA community, the always-on VPN by Microsoft seems to be a really hot topic right now. And a lot of people are rolling it out. And a lot of people rolled it out during the pandemic. So yeah. that's fascinating.
Well, but if you think about the Mark, the problem with VPN is that BACnet is flat traditionally. So when you're on VPN and you're on the BACnet, you're on with everything else. All the other stuff in the environment by design, right? We just don't do that's that is a Swiss cheese environment. You have to kind of figure out a way to protect then.
Yeah.
By eliminating BACnet, there's no more Swiss cheese to talk to.
Yeah, I mean, conceptually, I see exactly what you're saying. You know, we actually have what we call a metal network that hosts a number of servers, and that network is technically invisible to the rest of our internal LAN, but it's not nearly as segregated as what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and people do things like, you know, blast networks or like isolated networks, what we call east-west firewalling in the environments, right? But like, you know, with AppProxy, there is no more need for east-west. And once again, if you have something, if even east-west has a bunch of different things on it, like you call this metal network, those can all communicate with each other, which means that lateral movement can move between them as well.
Right.
When you don't have BACnet anymore and everything is, you know, individual entities, you don't have any ability for an object to climb from point A to point B because there is no, anyways, it takes a little bit of describing, but it works like a charm. And it, by the way, we give it away almost with almost every licensing vehicle that we offer too. It's like one of the most powerful tools in our suite of stuff that nobody talks about.
And that's AppProxy?
Yeah. Azure AppProxy. Honestly, because it's, and I don't want to go into a pitch here. I'm just saying it's a really powerful tool. But if you think about the goals are to eliminate ransomware and get people off of BACnet because it's so fraught with opportunity for crazy.
Yeah, you don't need to go into a sales pitch. You've told us the name. That's enough for us to like, and you've piqued our curiosity. That's, you know, that's the real thing that we need to know from you is like, what are the hidden gems? So you mentioned LAPS.
LAPS, so, Local Administrator Password Service, yeah.
Sure, and I'm familiar with it and I've used it. Are you telling me that you're using it now?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All of our devices, you know, you still need a management account on many servers or something for your administrators to use in the event that you need some management, but nobody knows those passwords for local accounts.
Right.
Once you use them, it gets rotated to something else. Check it out like a library book, right? And as soon as you check it in, it changes its persona to something else. So, remember, you got to come back to the big point. If somebody breaches my machine and they try and get a cred and use that to go somewhere else, that cred is dead. There's no place else for it to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a wonderful thing that stops lateral attacks dead in their tracks.
That and going passwordless and getting off of BACnet. Like, you can kind of look at them as defense in depth discussions, all of them. You know what I mean? It's each of them plays a role.
Right. It's fascinating to me that the endpoint is in a work group and not in a traditional domain. That's for those of us who have been doing this for decades, literally. I mean, I implemented my first Windows NT advanced server domain in probably 1993 or 1994.
You and me both. Yeah. NT351. I remember it dearly.
So, you know, you're going to have to, not really. I was going to say you're going to have to pry it out of my cold, dead hands.
Well, you get a lot of that. Oh, it'll take us a long time to do that because it's such a transformational change. But I'll tell you, even as an end user of this, I didn't know that I changed from being domain joined to Azure AD joined, for example. It just, as an end user, you don't really feel it, honestly. And you can't tell the difference. I could initially, like 7 years ago when we did this, I felt a slight difference, but I would say—
Holy smokes.
Pardon?
7 years ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So,
I am way behind the times.
Yeah. But when we get, once you like, once they worked the initial bugs out about 7 years ago, and I would say that we've figured these out at this point, a user really doesn't feel any different from being Azure AD joined to domain joined. It just doesn't, there's no difference from the end user perspective because it's all about certificates and traffic and
right.
things like that. So we obfuscate that away from the user. They don't really know.
Right. And so let's talk for a minute about how you can like reset or deployment. I'm aware that, for example, if you want to, you can reset your PC.
Yeah.
And like remotely, you know, we're still like in my own organization where we are deploying new laptops right now. We're deploying them from we're using the modern deployment tools in M365, but we're only in the pilot stage. We're still working out bugs and we still are not fully experienced with all the features, functions, and benefits of this type of deployment. In the past, we used SCCM and MDT. Can you tell me a little bit more about how deployment, resetting, user state migration, those things work?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, essentially you have to, I never want to dive into the answer without kind of describing the problem. Is it, you know, with the problem that we experience is that people, especially now, are working remote and going into the office is problematic, you know, even, you know, at the end of COVID, but all throughout COVID. But for us, you know, the kind of the way that my life experience is like whenever I get frustrated with my computer, I just basically hit the reset button on it. But and it rebuilds it, you know, it joins back into the, you know, into my org password in a passwordless way. I don't have to use my password. And then it just kind of syncs all my applications back down onto my device. And my files are kind of obviously stored in OneDrive for Microsoft, my personal stuff.
Right.
And so like, it, you know, resetting my PC is only problematic in that I have to reload any personal applications that I installed. Right. But otherwise everything comes back to me and everything just flows back onto my device. You know, but that's the other thing that we run into, especially during COVID, is if my machine broke, you know, like literally as a Microsoft employee, I could go to whatever store I want, buy a laptop, as long as it meets the hardware requirements, you know, that we have, which I you know, that's not even a thing anymore, but like, you know, I would just say install and I type in my PaulEdlin@Microsoft.com stuff and it just, it says it MFAs and then that works too. As far as like, you know, making it completely seamless for users, if you had a more white glove service, which many law firms do, is actually you would send them a device that was pre-configured and all they would do is turn it on, join a wireless network. And that's the only question that they got asked. Is what wireless network do you want me to join? And after that, the whole thing happens silently without a single piece of user input. And that's referred to as autopilot. I mean, like a lot sure. of it is back ended by autopilot. But, you know, the idea there is that it's, you know, you don't have to go into the office. You don't have to bother anybody. Your applications and all your data come right back down to you. And in many cases, we don't even get the data off of your device. We just kind of move it to a little section of the hard drive. We wipe the operating system. We reinstall the OS. And then the user state migration tool just puts the data back into a folder that it belongs in. But it's awesome.
That sounds amazing. So we're at the end of our time.
Yep.
I wanted to say thank you, Paul.
Absolutely.
And Paul, you mentioned two different links by which we can keep up with the news and the updates on the security, privacy, and compliance tools. Can you remind us what those two links are?
Yeah, it's hard. Like I was saying, it's hard for me to keep up, so I empathize with you. So there's really two places that you can go to keep up to date with Azure and Office 365. And the links are both start with the letters AKA, also known as AKA.ms/. And then there's two different links. One is M365 for Microsoft 365. So M365 roadmap. And the other one is AKA.ms/Azure roadmap. And what people will do is they'll take those as RSS feeds. And whenever anything changes in those sites, they'll put a ticket in their change management solution. So that's a great best practice. I would encourage everybody to do it. That way you're not having to go to the site to see what's changing. You're just kind of operationalizing the change in your ticketing tool. So that's my helpful hint for the day.
That's great, Paul. I really appreciate it. So with that, we're at the end of our time. Thank you very much, Paul, for joining us today. This was super helpful. You know, hope to see you again soon.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.